You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
To the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 6th of February 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live today at radioalbion.com, because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org. Matt, good afternoon to you, sir. How are you doing today?
You know, it just occurred to me just now that one of the benefits of being a single man is that I don't have to buy any embarrassing things at the grocery store anymore. That's very underestimated as one of the perks of being single. Just figured you'd know that you're not missing anything, you know.
Well, just think how embarrassing it is if you were a single trans man and you're having to buy sanitary products at the store. I mean, that's at the forefront of all the arguments at the moment. All the politicians are making a big fuss about that in Britain at the moment, but we don't really want to be talking about that today. We want to be talking about Trump's State of the Union address, which I didn't actually see myself. I know that you endured the whole thing, sat right the way through it. What we have seen of that so far over here, Matt, is Nancy Pelosi tearing up all these bits of paper behind Donald Trump, which I thought was very, very childish, juvenile, petulant. And I heard that Trump had ignored her holding out her hand to shake his hand, and I thought, well, that's very rude as well. But I actually saw that today, and it looked to me as if Trump didn't even notice that she was holding out her hand. He didn't shake Mike Pence's hand. It wasn't something he was expecting to do, was to shake her hand. So I thought, well, maybe she set that up as well. Just before we get into breaking apart some of what he said here, what are your thoughts on that, the Nancy Pelosi tearing up paper and refusing to shake Trump's hand?
I have the feeling that she knew that he was going to beat the impeachment charges. And going in front of these people and talking about how wonderful everything is was probably too much for her mind to handle at one time. I've seen a few pictures that she had her copy of that address pre-torn because of how thick it was. So she had planned this for some time. It was maybe an eighth of the way torn. So when she tore it, she didn't have to, you know, be embarrassed. I've seen more than one picture of that from the top angle. So that's a gesture that she had planned for a while. But I have the feeling that she knew Trump was going to win.
It was basically theatrics. It looked terrible anyway. It just looked very, very, very childish. Well, let's get into what he actually had to say anyway. Some of it was good. Some of it was bad. Beginning with, he said, "I am thrilled to report to you tonight that our economy is the best it has ever been. Our military is completely rebuilt, with its power being unmatched anywhere in the world. And it's not even close. Our borders are secure. Our families are flourishing. Our values are renewed. Our pride is restored. And for all of these reasons, I say to the people of our great country and to the members of Congress, the state of our union is stronger than ever before." And, you know, he says this while he's being impeached by the Democrats, while the military is falling apart. The economy was pretty much handed to him in a good situation, and he hasn't secured the borders at all. There's no wall there. People are still continuing to flood in. He's done nothing for white people. I mean, he says our families are flourishing. Okay, maybe the non-whites are doing a little bit better over there, but I don't see him doing anything for white families. And I know you want to talk a little bit about the economic aspects of this, Matt. What do you make of this first few sentences that he brought up?
Well, I'm watching this thing, and you know, I'm saying he's 2 minutes into his speech, and I'm already angry. Yeah, this was the first thing he said after the pleasantries. But, you know, he didn't inherit a very good economy. The statistics are usually bogus. But when you look at other measures, things like private non-residential fixed investment, which is a major barometer of the economy, that has been falling for some time now. All kinds of durable goods, including capital goods, those orders keep falling. New home sales continue to fall. And importantly, you know, the Fright Index, which I've mentioned on this show before, at the end, by December of last year, had fallen by almost 8%. And I want to note, too, when it comes to statistics, and this is I got from Paul Craig Roberts, you know, things like penalties on your credit card and student loans and things like that, that's actually included as growth in the financial services sector of the economy. So when you talk about the GDP growth, you know, any amount of money that's generated, even in things like you know, penalties and all kind of, even forms of interest, these are considered markers of growth in the economy. Anything. The economy could be collapsing, but if people are keeping up with debt payments, it's considered growth. So none of these statistics that come out of the BDS should be taken seriously. We've talked about that on the show. But yeah, pretty much nothing what he said here, especially the military, really got me. Our values are renewed. This is such an outrageous way to begin. I want to believe that this is essentially a middle finger to Nancy Pelosi, but this isn't the place to do stuff like that.
Well, of course, that's the problem with the a debt-based economy, isn't it? You know, it's basically just built on debt, and yet the people at the top will consider that the debt is somehow a bonus. That's somehow an increase, and yet they're not the ones that are making the money from the debt. It's because, as we know, the Fed is run by private bankers. All the central banks are run by private bankers, apart from those few countries that are left that they wish to make war against, like Iran and North Korea. But after that, he moved on to the unemployment rate. He said the unemployment rate is the lowest in over half a century. And very incredibly, the average unemployment rate under my administration is lower than any administration in the history of our country. True, if we hadn't reversed the failed economic policies of the previous administration, the world would not now be witnessing this great economic success. Now, he keeps on going on about this. This is Trump's biggest thing, is this big economic success that he has caused in America, and this fantastic employment rate that they've got over there. And from what I'm hearing is that yes, the employment rate has gone up for blacks, but it hasn't gone up for anybody else. Am I correct in that, Matt? And just how true is this about this unemployment rate for everyone else?
Well, it all depends on how you figure it. You know, female employment continues to go through the roof. So we're talking really about men here. But I mentioned on this program before, when NAFTA was passed in 94, the BLS completely changed how they figure the unemployment rate. You know, discouraged workers aren't included. People who are no longer receiving benefits or don't apply for benefits aren't included. People in the military are included in the number of people working, which was not the case before that. It was deliberately designed to minimize the unemployment that came from NAFTA and everything that came afterwards. So you can't trust any of it. But if you look at other figures, like, you know, shipments, your shipments of goods, even the price of copper, which, by the way, is a huge, a very, very important category. It's in construction, in electronics. You know, the price of copper suggests that you know, things aren't going well. Freight rates, all this stuff. Yeah, for certain sectors of the economy, educated women especially, things are going well. But that's it. So the unemployment rate, if you include underemployment, be something like 15 or 20%, if not higher. And for him to say that it's the lowest in the history of America, this is what I could, you know, during World War II, you know, the unemployment was almost zero. In the history of America? This is just ridiculous hyperbole.
He must be meaning ever since they started recording it as unemployment. I mean, they probably weren't actually recording it as unemployment back then. He probably means since they started recording it and the figures began. I mean, to to give him credit there. So he's been massaging the figures, basically. And you brought up women there, and the next statement that we have from him here concerns women. He says, the unemployment rate for women reached the lowest level in almost 70 years. And last year, women filled 72% of all new jobs added. Well, why is that supposed to be something positive? If three-quarters of all new jobs were taken up by women, then that means that men have been missing out. If these women are at work, it means that their children are missing out. What are they doing? Are they franchising out the position and the role of mother to just people that want to be paid for that? I mean, how do the children feel about this, about all their mothers going to work instead of raising them in the way that traditionally all our ancestors were raised by their mother at home while their father was out at work? I don't understand, you know, why people would think that this was such a good thing. And he, of all people, because, I mean, he claims to be a supporter of tradition here. And yet, at the same time, he's pushing this idea that women should be in work. I mean, maybe this is him pushing back against the idea that he's a misogynist and that he doesn't like women. So maybe that's why he's pushing this. Now, how true is this, Matt? And what are your thoughts on it?
No, I think it's true, but it's certainly nothing to cheer about. Every woman in a lucrative position is taking that from a man who doesn't have it. Men can't support their families, and women want nothing to do with such men. There are no studies on this particular subject that I've ever been able to find, but anecdotally, in my experience and most people I know, I don't know a single solitary college-educated, good-looking woman that does not have an amazing job that she has no qualifications for. And being a professor for 20 years, I know a lot of women with college degrees. Every one of them is doing well, unless they're sick or something like that. Now, there's no studies that have been done on this, but it's something that I'm noticing everywhere. In college, women insanely outnumber men. Young women out of college are making far more money than men are. And 7/8 of all layoffs since the late 70s, deindustrialization, have been in male-dominated areas. They've almost all been men. So I guess, given what Trump has said here, you know, I guess the women could pay for the movie tickets on dates now, huh? It pissed me off.
Yeah, well, you know, if 3/4 of new jobs are going to women, why do they need to have these diversity quotas? Why do they need to have women-only shortlists? I mean, it must be similar over here in Britain. And Keir Starmer, who is in the leadership contender for the Labour Party, he wants to bring in a law that they have all women shortlists. And they're now saying we've got to have all women shortlists for the boardroom as well to get women in there. But if 72% of all new jobs are already going to them, Why do we need to add to that? Why do we need to say that people have to employ them regardless of merit? Why can't we just have people employed on merit in positions that they're qualified to be in? Well, continuing, he said, since my election, the net worth of the bottom half of wage earners has increased by 47%, three times faster than the increase for the top 1%. After decades of flat and falling incomes, wages are rising fast. And wonderfully, they are rising fastest for low-income workers, who have seen a 16% pay rise since my election, 16% pay increase since my election. This is a blue-collar boom. Is this true, Matt? Is this really what's happening? Have the lowest half of wage earners really seen their net worth increase by 47%?
I see no evidence for this. I think the only thing that may make it partially true is that states have raised the minimum wage. But the way the economy functions, really the blue collar, especially blue collar men, have been taking a huge hit since really the early 70s. So if you include increases in the minimum wage and this tremendous boom in female incomes, he may be partially correct. But for white males, I'm pretty sure black males too in this country, they're not sharing in this. And this is just – I know the Federal Reserve back in 2008 said that 39% of – almost 40% of Americans have no savings. They don't even have $400 in cash available for a medical emergency. And that was just, you know, about a year and a half ago. So no, I simply don't believe this. The minimum wage is really the only thing that he has going for him, and that's artificial.
Well, he says the real median household income is now at the highest level ever recorded. But wouldn't you get that anyway with inflation? Wouldn't everything be at the highest level ever recorded? Has that been adjusted for inflation, do you think, Matt? The real median household income, supposedly at the highest level ever?
Yeah, we've again, all these hyperbolic statements. Inflation is much higher than is reported. So, of course, it's going to be the highest ever. Of course, the debt is also the highest ever. They may be making a few dollars more, which I doubt. But even if they are, it's not worth nearly as much. So this is just – then he says the stock market has gone up by 70%. So I guess it's not a blue-collar bull.
Yeah, he says, since my election, U.S. stock markets have soared 70%, adding more than $12 trillion to our nation's wealth, transcending anything anyone believed was possible. This is a record. It is something that every country in the world is looking up to. They admire. Consumer confidence has just reached amazing new highs. Now, I have heard about this. I've heard that stock markets have gone up, and this is accurate. But has he really added $12 trillion to the nation's wealth, do you know?
Again, it depends on how you figure it. If a company buys back its own stock, it artificially keeps the price high. Stock prices are wildly inflated as it is. The debt bubble still exists. And so, you know, if they buy back their own stocks, that's considered a growth rate. And they do other things, quantitative easing, printing money and sending it to the stock market. This is all considered growth. This doesn't mean anyone's producing anything. It's completely artificial. And as far as consumer confidence, I laughed. Because in June of 2019, there is a economic policy uncertainty index. And there they use the Congressional Budget Office, newspaper reports, and the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia and their forecast. And that index is, as of June of 2019, is use hyperbole, at its all-time highest level. So he's certainly not telling the truth in that respect. That's just 6 months ago. It was at the uncertainty was at its highest level. The fact that gold continues to go up proves that there is no confidence in this system.
Well, there wouldn't be if people are still going out there and buying gold rather than investing. He says, thanks to our bold regulatory reduction campaign, the United States has become the number one producer of oil and natural gas anywhere in the world by far. With the tremendous progress we have made over the past 3 years, America is now energy independent, and energy jobs, like so many other elements of our country, are at a record high. We are doing numbers that no one would have thought possible just 3 years ago. Well, is that down to this, him reducing the regulations? Is that a good thing? I mean, what sort of regulations is he reducing? Is he reducing things like waste regulations so that these oil companies don't have to clean up after themselves, so that they can pollute the water table and all that sort of thing? Is that what he means here? What is this all about, Matt, this bold regulatory reduction campaign that has led to this big boom in oil and natural gas?
Well, that's part of it, because when a company is able to externalize its cost, but of course privatize its profits, that means, you know, money is taken out of the economy without it being recorded, because it simply increases the cost of goods, even though it's not necessarily on the sticker. But societies and towns have to clean things up and do things. You know, employees at Walmart are often on subsidized housing and subsidized medical insurance. That means Walmart doesn't have to do it, doesn't have to supply it. But to claim, in this passage, I couldn't believe he's claiming energy independence. And my first thought, I said this out loud, was, well, so we don't have to be in the Middle East anymore, right? Because since I've been in this field, everyone says that these wars in the Middle East are about oil. Well, if we don't need them anymore and we're energy independent, then we should pull out, right? Well, you know, that's not going to happen. So if oil isn't a concern, why are we there? I mean, we get a tiny percentage of oil from the Middle East anyway, so it's never been about oil. It's about one thing and one thing only, And we all know it's the interest of the Hindu minority in Jerusalem. That's why we're there. You know, it isn't oil. And whether he's right about being energy independent, you ain't going to leave the Middle East. So that means it's never been about oil.
Yeah, that's a good point to bring up there. He says, one of the biggest promises I made to the American people was to replace the disastrous NAFTA trade deal. In fact, unfair trade is perhaps the single biggest reason that I decided to run for president. Following NAFTA's adoption, our nation lost 1 in 4 manufacturing jobs. Many politicians came and went, pledging to change or replace NAFTA, only to do so, and then absolutely nothing happened. But unlike so many who came before me, I keep my promises. We did our job. Did he do the job? Did he do his job? Have you got a better trade deal now than you had with NAFTA, Matt?
Well, he substituted it. That is a promise that he made. He said the same thing. You know, he has the USMCA now, which is supposed to be the substitute. But to think that somehow manufacturing jobs are coming back in the U.S. is simply not true. There have been a few high-profile cases. It's true. We've talked about it on this show before, that they would rather take – GM would rather take a loss. No, I think it was Ford would rather take a loss than to pull its factories out of China. And they're figuring, well, there'll be another president here in either 4 or you know, back then 8 years, and it'll be different then. He has repealed NAFTA. TPP is not an issue anymore. But to think that all of a sudden, you know, we're manufacturing like we used to, we don't even have the infrastructure for that. We don't have the educated population that would know how to get into a manufacturing job. That's going to take decades before that happens. Manufacturing is, and you go right to the CBO in this respect, is still struggling. But of course, they include things like textiles as manufacturing. Even printing is considered manufacturing. So all they got to do is change the definition of these things. And all of a sudden, there's manufacturing is back again. No, they're not leaving these places. They're getting subsidized loans for going out there. And not to mention the fact that they're getting the third world brought to America. So a lot of these manufacturing jobs, to the extent they exist, are not being filled by white Americans.
So they're manipulating the figures again. He says, 6 days ago, I replaced NAFTA and signed the brand new US-Mexico-Canada agreement into law. The USMCA will create nearly 100,000 new high-paying American auto jobs and massively boost exports for our farmers, ranchers, and factory workers. It will also bring trade with Mexico and Canada to a much higher level, but also to be a much greater degree of fairness and reciprocity. We will have that fairness and reciprocity, and I say that finally, because it's been many, many years that we were treated fairly on trade. So you got 100,000 new jobs that he has created, Matt. Is that true?
Well, there's something called the Purchasing Managers Index, and this has to do with orders for certain goods that manufacturers need. I mentioned the copper prices, which is a barometer. It's at its highest since 2009. When the trade war opened up with China, the first thing that the Federal Reserve said is that our manufacturing is so weak, we can't afford to do this. And, you know, things again, like new home sales, fixed capital goods, capital investment, all of these things are not up, but they're down. So I don't know what investment he's talking about. He could fudge the numbers, but there's always other figures to go to that show he's all wet.
Well, next he brought China up. He said, I also promised our citizens that I would impose tariffs to confront China's massive theft of America's jobs. Our strategy has worked. Days ago, we signed the groundbreaking new agreement with China that will defend our workers, protect our intellectual property, bring billions and billions of dollars into our treasury, and open vast new markets for products made and grown right here in the USA. For decades, China has taken advantage of the United States. Now we have changed that, but at the same time, we have perhaps the best relationship we've ever had with China, including with President Xi. They respect what we've done because, quite frankly, they could never really believe that they were able to get away with what they were doing year after year, decade after decade, without someone in our country stepping up and saying, that's enough. Now we want to rebuild our country, and that's exactly what we are doing. We are rebuilding our country. Well, that's a lot of tough talk there against China. Have China really given in to him? Are they really changed their ways? And is America going to be benefiting now from, instead of China benefiting the other way around?
When he said this, I wrote on Facebook as he's saying this, I said, did he just say that now China respects us or even fears us because of these tariffs that he threw on a year ago? I mean, we're starting a war with China over Xinjiang and the Western provinces, starting another war with China in the South China Sea and the Philippines, another war with China over Hong Kong. And he says because tariffs were put on a few goods, China is now petrified and respects us and has come to the table. I honestly think that Trump has done everything possible that a president can do. I mean, presidents can only do executive orders. This stuff has to come from Congress, not the president. He can't really pass laws. But as president, I think he's done pretty much all you can do under extreme pressure to do the opposite, given that office. But, you know, since another indicator that I mentioned, said it before too, that there is no recovery, there is no manufacturing increase, there's nothing, is inventories. Inventories sitting in warehouses have gone up over 8%. And that hasn't come down from 2018. Retailers are sitting on almost $1 trillion worth of goods they can't move. This hasn't changed over the last year. All of these are alternative indicators saying that he's simply not telling the truth here. I think his intentions are excellent. I think he's done all he can do. But presidents don't control investment. They don't control economies, and they sure as hell don't control capital flows worldwide. His intentions are good. He's pissed a lot of liberals off in doing this and free traders, but there's only so much he can do.
Well, he's behaving just like all the other politicians here, isn't he, really? Just, you know, sort of taking from Peter to pay Paul and covering it up and saying, well, look, we've given you all of this, when in actual fact, you know, it's all just hot air, really. When he moved into geopolitics next, he said, we are supporting the hopes of Cubans, Nicaraguans and Venezuelans to restore democracy. How about he supports the hopes of white Americans instead of all these South Americans? He says the United States is leading a 59-nation diplomatic coalition against the socialist dictator of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro. Maduro is an illegitimate ruler, a tyrant who brutalizes his people. But Maduro's grip on tyranny will be smashed and broken. Here this evening is a very brave man who carries with him the hopes, dreams, and aspirations of all Venezuelans. Joining us in the gallery is the true and legitimate president of Venezuela, Juan Guaido. Mr. President, please take this message back to your homeland. Thank you, Mr. President. Great honor. Thank you very much. Please take this message back that all Americans are united with the Venezuelan people in their righteous struggle for freedom. Thank you very much, Mr. President. Thank you very much. And Guaido has got no authority whatsoever in Venezuela. I mean, nothing at all. He's still referred to as the leader of the opposition. It's just America that seems to just assume that he's now the president. I'm sure you've got a lot to say about this bit, Matt.
Well, I couldn't believe he was actually there. People forget that he did, like all of these pro-Western politicians around the world, he was educated in America. He has positions in American universities. I think he's out of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. He speaks fluent English. I think he's a dual citizen. He was there. Now, he's recently lost his speaker position. I mean, he barely won a small plurality in a middle-of-nowhere race with CIA money. I mean, the guy has no authority even in his own district, let alone the country. But he kept condemning, you know, this not just Marxian socialism, but national socialism and all forms of kind of idealistic socialism. And yet Maduro is trying to follow Chavez's path, and Chavez was a huge success. Trump talks about American energy independence. Well, Venezuela also achieved energy independence under Chavez. And that, however, was a problem. Only the U.S. is allowed to do that. When Chavez created Petrocarb in 2005, not only was Venezuela energy independent, it was financing the energy projects all over Central and Latin America, including poor people in this country. So when I heard him mention this, after he just talked about energy independence, I said, well, I guess it's only for the Americans. But the kind of national socialism under Chavez was a massive success, both in, you know, in reducing poverty, giving land to peasants. Public debt fell almost 50% under his rule. GDP per capita rose. You know, those kind of – the language that Trump is using could be used by Chavez. And the only reason it's not being done under Maduro is because there's a massive sanctions regime on any of America's enemies in Latin America. And unlike other places, America is the big market for Latin American economies. And if you get shut out of it, you're in trouble. So this man is weak even in Venezuela. And the fact that he was there, fluent English speaker, I did not see that coming.
Well, finally, he had something to say about immigration. He said, over 130 legislators in this chamber have endorsed legislation that would bankrupt our nation by providing free, taxpayer-funded healthcare to millions of illegal aliens, forcing taxpayers to subsidize free care for anyone in the world who unlawfully crosses our borders. These proposals would raid the Medicare benefits of our seniors and that our seniors depend on, while acting as a powerful lure for illegal immigration. Well, that's good. I wish they would do that over here in Britain and prevent foreigners from just using our NHS, which is paid for by us. And he also said, I ask Congress to pass the Justice for Victims of Sanctuary Cities Act immediately. The United States of America should be a sanctuary for law-abiding Americans, not criminal aliens. As a result of our unprecedented efforts, illegal crossings are down 75% since May, dropping 8 straight months in a row. And as the wall rapidly goes up, drug seizures rise, and the border crossings are down and going down very rapidly. I just wish that was true. Matt, what did you make of what he had to say about immigration?
I don't know if anyone actually watched this televised, but he mentioned some guy who was murdered by an illegal immigrant, and he introduced his brother, whose name was Jordy. You should have seen this guy. He looks like a mafia hitman. He could have killed the guy himself. I mean, he was the toughest, meanest, biggest guy I've seen in years. I don't know if that's, you know, was part of the reason for it. But he had all these individuals. I think he was the only white guy there. But the problem with what Trump is saying is that there are no statistics for apprehensions. Illegal crossings, according to the Border Patrol, are up at a 13-year high. Between 2016 and now, they're up 81%. I think Obama removed more in his first 4 years than Trump has actually by far. Arrests might be up. That might be true. But that doesn't mean border crossings are up. But since there's no official statistics on that particular indicator, it's hard to tell. Most estimates say that it's increased, not decreased.
Well, he did have something good to say against abortion as well. He said, that is why I'm also calling upon members of Congress here tonight to pass legislation finally banning the late-term abortion of babies. Whether we are Republican, Democrat, or Independent, surely we must all agree that every human life is a sacred gift from God. And, you know, I have to give him credit for this. He has stood against abortion, and he does speak about it. And finally, he appears to be taking the credit from Russia for getting rid of ISIS. He says, 3 years ago, the barbarians of ISIS held over 20,000 square miles of territory in Iraq and Syria. Today, the ISIS territorial caliphate has been 100% destroyed, and the founder and leader of ISIS, the bloodthirsty killer known as al-Baghdadi, is dead. Well, yeah, they got one guy, but what does that matter? How many of them were taking orders from al-Baghdadi? I think most of them are, you know, they're just individual lone wolf actors. We see them coming out of prison in Britain and going on to carry out terrorist acts. I mean, killing this guy al-Baghdadi, that was all just a propaganda mission, I suspect. Matt, what are your final thoughts on all of this?
Well, my final thoughts is that, you know, I have a whole list of times where the U.S. government and U.S. politicians condemned Russian attacks on ISIS, and how many times Russian intelligence proved that the U.S. is arming them, rescuing them, running interference for them. And al-Baghdadi, there's been news reports on his death every year, I think, for the last 5 years at least. The Russians said that there was nothing special that day. There was no attack on anything. They had the whole place under surveillance. It's nonsense. For him to take credit for that, the abortion comment was great. And the Democrats did not cheer. Late term. The comments about illegal immigration was great. The Democrats did not cheer, even though they're talking about flooding the country and the Democrats refused to cheer about it, including criminal aliens. At least, though, they didn't cheer for the ISIS thing either, because I think most of these guys know it's absolute nonsense. And this is Russians and the Syrian army did this. The U.S. created ISIS and the U.S. armed ISIS and continues to do so.
Well, I think we can sum that up with could do better, Donald, I think. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.